Welcome to the Scrum.org Community Podcast, a podcast from the home of Scrum. In this podcast, we feature professional Scrum trainers and other Scrum practitioners sharing their stories and experiences to help learn from the experience of others. This episode is a previous recording of our live Ask a Professional Scrum Trainer series, where a live audience asks questions of professional Scrum trainers. We hope you enjoy this episode. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you're located today. Welcome to Ask Professional Scrum Trainer. I'm Lindsay Velasina. I will be your moderator today. And we are super lucky today to have two PSTs with us to answer your Scrum questions. We have Andriana Marshall and we have Scott Adams. So welcome, everybody. And thank you, Andriana and Scott, for taking the time today. And very quickly about Scrum.org, we are the home of Scrum. We were founded by Ken Schwaber back in 2009. Our mission is to help people and teams solve complex problems. And we do so through our professional Scrum training, professional Scrum certification, and our ongoing learning opportunities. So there are a lot of free opportunities on the Scrum.org website and some great content there, learning paths, learning series, things of that nature. So please be sure to check out these free resources to help you continue your learning. That's super important. The learning does not stop at the classroom. So please take advantage of that. And you're obviously taking advantage of some of it because you're here today. So with that, I will hand it over to Andriana and Scott to introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Andriana Marshall. I've been in tech and a Scrum Master or a Senior Technical Program Manager for over 10 years now. I'm the founder of Project Academy, which focuses on professional Scrum training because I'm obviously a professional Scrum trainer, enabling agility, even some PMP, as I do have that program management background and as well as some technical background. So AWS Cloud Training coming soon. And really also the business is focused on coaching and helping people, land jobs. And both Scott and I actually, anytime you take a class with us, you do get a free one-on-one. So we do coach and help people implement what they learn or, get a job, as I mentioned. And Scott and I are also, we both co-host the Not Scrum Dumb podcast, where I think we add both education and fun together. So there's a education and a lot of laughs, and hopefully we get to have fun answering your questions today. All right, Scott.
Greetings, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. Lindsay, thank you so much for hosting this. Thank you, Scrum.org, for this amazing platform. A little bit about me. I've been in Scrum and Agile space for about over 10 years now. I started out in project management. And that just wasn't the right tool for some of the complex things that we was trying to solve. So being a Scrum practitioner for quite some time, been a PST since 2019, December. That was my Christmas present back in 2019. Yay! I do contract Scrum Master for Fortune 100 companies at this particular point. I did full-time work for a while, but I like the flexibility of contract work. I am the founder of Scrum Academy. Offer, Scrum.org amazing classes. And also a co-host of Not Scrum Dumb Show. We're excited to be here for you. Looking forward to answering your questions. Lindsay.
Awesome. All right. Thank you, everybody. So I'm going to stop sharing. It is time for questions. So very quickly, question about you both. What do you cover in the Not Scrum Dumb podcast?
I guess I'll get started. We cover a little bit, I mean, obviously Scrum. So we cover that. We cover a range from landing a job to giving some practical skills, giving some, one we did recently was how do you actually teach Scrum in your organization? We actually use one of the templates that Scrum.org created. And then even recently we talked about AWS, so Amazon Web Services, the cloud platform. So we're also introducing a little bit of other things to kind of help people gain additional skills and see if certain things are the right fit for them. So we've been doing this for a little over a year. So we're experimenting with some new things. So we're always open to new things, but Scott, did I miss anything?
No, you covered it very well. It's just, we offer practical tips and just some different ideas. We talk about things as a scrum master, you may feel imposter syndrome, just things like that, just normal stuff that we all go through and, our own experiences. Even though we're professional scrum trainers, we feel some of the same feelings and go through the same stuff as you too. We're not immune to it. But yeah,
One
very
quick
nice.
thing, we do take on questions. So people do submit questions, whether that's via LinkedIn or in our comment section, and then we turn those into videos as well. So that's another thing that we do to help generate content to make sure that we're giving our audience what they're looking for.
Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, I just want to give you an opportunity to, plug your own podcast there before we get started. Perhaps some people already listened to it and drove them to come to this session or listen into this session. So, cool stuff there. So, here's a question. So, what is the Scrum guidance around Scrum Master support of career development for individual Scrum team members? Or your own guidance?
I'll start
Scott, do you
off.
want to take this one? Okay.
Yes, I'll start off with that one. What is the guidance around Scrum Master support of career development for individual Scrum team members? The Scrum Guide is not prescriptive, but we are in an environment where we want to inspect and adapt. We have empiricism to fall back on. Empiricism means we make decisions based upon what's known. So as we doing, I'm thinking about as we doing the retrospective, if we see something that's not working, whether it's a team framework, your question is around individual. If we see that your team is lacking in some skill set, whatever your environment may be, how about we, hey, how about we incorporate some type of learning in this sprint? Could be a retrospective continuous improvement item. Just take it to the team and let the team decide, would be my 2 cents on that. Andrana, anything to
Yeah,
add?
one of the things that I'll add is I look at when I was a Scrum Master, and I think helping individuals, like you do have to coach them one-on-one to get better, and that does ultimately help your team get better. I worked on a team where there were two people that both wanted to be leads on the same team, and they bickered and argued about everything. Things that weren't even worth arguing about, they would argue about. And so through like one-on-one coaching, having these discussions with them, understanding what their motives are, one of the things I told each of them is no one's going to make you a lead if you can't get along with people. You have to be able to work with different personalities and find a middle ground and negotiate with them. And that seemed to help because then they understood like leadership isn't that simple. Like it's not just if I can't just lead when I like that person. So that's another thing. I know you specifically said career development, but that both of them did end up as our company grew becoming leads. So coaching them one-on-one, helping them get individually better will ultimately help their career and understanding what those gaps are. Hopefully that helps.
Great advice. Thank you both. So here's an interesting question. So what tips do you have for showing value within your company or showing value when applying for a role? Kind of two-ply question there. Want to take this one, Adriana?
Yeah, I think the initial thing that comes to mind when I think about a showing value, when it comes to applying for a role, is I completely changed my resume from saying what I do to actually what I've achieved. And as a Scrum Master, what you work with the team on is also your achievement as well. So we worked on X program or X, cost saving initiative and saved $250,000 per year. That's how I would show the value. And I think when you're at your company on an individual level, when you are, I think you have to document everything as it happens, because sometimes those one-on-one coaching, they cannot be seen. And working with your manager on a weekly or bi-weekly basis, where you're like, here's the things that we've accomplished this week, or here's where I put in some input, and documenting those things and sharing that with your manager so it doesn't go unnoticed. Those are things that I would recommend off top based on that question. But Scott, do you have anything to add to this?
Yeah, I would tackle the second part of that, or show value when applying for a role. Thank you for your question, James. I actually had an interview this morning before this call, And as Andriana identified, I kind of make sure I change my resume, not only to highlight the certifications I've done, the places I've worked for, but also to really just quantify that. Okay, tell me something. Okay, what did you do while you was with that company? And again, your specific question is show value when applying for a role. So I got things on my resume now that my last team I was with back in December, we was able to achieve 100% predictability. That was a KPI metric that they was looking for. So what is predictability? Predictability is, okay, we at sprint planning, we decide, let's say we're going to take 10 product backlog items. Okay, let's fast forward. Now we're working on those 10 product backlog items. Now, by the time we get to the sprint review, the goal is for us to hopefully complete all of those things, right? Absolutely. So when we get to the sprint review, we look at it, we completed all 10 items, or we achieved the sprint goal. Doesn't have to be both. So we achieve what we tried to achieve. We accomplished the goal. We delivered some value for the customer. Great. Now, if we completed all 10 product of 10 product backlog items, that's fantastic as well. So we committed to doing 10 product backlog items in sprint planning. By the time we get to the sprint review, we completed 10 product backlog items. Our predictability score is 100%. So now I put that on my resume. So hey, I helped the team to achieve 100% predictability, which means, hey, you could count on us to deliver something most sprints. No scrum team deliver each and every sprint. A lot of things happen that we cannot control, but that was a metric that they used in that particular company. I hope that helps.
That's awesome. Sorry, I was muted for a moment. Bad meeting, faux pas. But thank you both so much. I think there's some really good insight there from both of you. Thank you. So this next question here. So for a small team, less than 5 members with a maturity of 36 sprints, should we retrospect every 2 weeks or is once a month okay too?
I think for this one, it depends on what your sprint length is.
Right.
So, if your sprint length is 2 weeks, then every 2 weeks. If it's 1 month, it's every month. Now, I'll extend a little bit. If you're thinking about how long should my sprint be, ask yourself a few of these questions. How quickly does the business need to change direction? What's our investment, toward risk tolerance? Basically, how long can we go without getting feedback? How often do we need to get feedback from our stakeholders or our business? And how much time does it take us to actually produce a usable increment? Those are some of the things that come top of mind that you should ask yourself de in determining how long your sprint length should be. But if your sprint is 2 weeks, then you should do it every 2 weeks. You should be doing all of the events accordingly. If it's 1 month, then yes. 1 month. It shouldn't be any more than 1 month, but based on that question, that's my response.
Awesome. Thank you.
Totally agree. Just to add to that, I mean, yeah, totally. Take it to the team. Let them decide. Have your sprint cadence in place. Again, if you're doing 2 week sprints, then yes, just make sure you. Scrum requires us to do all of the events within a 1 month time box. So just make sure we adhere to the Scrum guide in terms of that, what it calls out. Very nice.
Awesome. Thank you. Here's a question. So, how would you gain some experience after receiving your certification? Scott, do you want to take this one?
Absolutely. Gained some experience after certification. I remember when I was making the transition from project management to get into Scrum and Agile, I went online and first of all, I downloaded Jira Platform. Why? Because I knew that that was the number one tool that most companies use, JIRA. So now that I got my certification, I need to try to get some practice. So I use Jira. I play, I ran, I played games with my family. I actually run Scrum with my family, really just getting practice. I use Scrum at my church. I went to my pastor, said, "Hey, let's try to use Scrum here at church. See if we can do something." I mean, just finding different ways. I even went to my non-for-profit organization, the YMCA. I go there to work out. And they was looking for a scrum master, but they didn't have any money to pay a scrum master. So I volunteered. Hey, I need some experience. I'll be doing, I would love to do that. So they didn't hire me because I was volunteering. I just wanted to practice. And then, you say, hey, would you be willing to give me a reference, when I get a job? Because this is what I'm trying to do full time. I said, oh, yeah, absolutely. So I was able to use that and put on my resume. And that was part of helping me to get a job, land a job as a Scrum Master. A couple items there.
That's a great story. Thank you. Andriana, anything to add?
No, I think that was great. Another thing is, actually, I do have something to add. So, one thing that I think is look at your company and see what ways you can implement there if you're already in a working environment. I've talked to people that look at how you can implement empiricism at the least, right? So, transparency, inspection, adaptation. Maybe you can't implement Scrum, but maybe you can start with at least adding that. Like inspection points, adapting, working with your team members on a specific cadence to actually inspect and adapt. Start somewhere. Don't just wait till you find like a perfect outside opportunity. See what you can do within your company. That's going to be the easiest way.
Awesome. Thank you. Some great tips there. So, I hope that was helpful. Here is a metrics focused question. I'm going to switch gears a little bit. So, other than burn down charts, how can we analyze project progress metrics wise? Andriana, want to take this one?
Yeah, so when I think of, I'll just start when I think of burn down chart, I think of just the developers using a burn down chart within their within themselves to track their progress toward the sprint goal. When I think of a project and I'm thinking something that may span several months, I'm thinking of actually using our sprint and the increment to help us understand where our progress is toward that project. So if we're delivering a done increment at the end of every sprint, that's going to be progress right there. So we get to see, all right, we have, let's say we're creating five new screens. We have one screen done this sprint. We're actually seeing progress toward that. So you do have your product backlog that should have everything you need in there to plan, forecast, and understand your progress toward that project. And or it's in some cases, it might even be the product goal instead of what your project is. So that's what initially comes to my mind when I think of tracking progress is actually using our sprint, our increment to track our progress. Scott, do you have anything else?
Absolutely. I would take a step back and go back on the video we just did. We did a product mindset versus a product mindset. So there will be two different approaches that we have there. So overall, yeah, it is a project, but our if we have a project mindset, the project is not over until all the tasks are done. If we have a product mindset, the project is over when we achieve the thing, whatever the thing is. So first of all, let's take a step and say, okay, which approach are we looking at? Then I will also throw in velocity in there. I like velocity from the standpoint of velocity means that it's an indicator of what the team can do. Going back to my example earlier, that if we had sprint planning, excuse me, if we had sprint planning, if the Scrum team takes in 10 product backlog items and they aren't able to complete those product backlog items by the end of the sprint. Now, let's say in the overall product backlog, we have 100 product backlog items left. So we can use velocity, what the team is completing on an average sprint by sprint basis, and we can use that to forecast how long would it potentially take for this project to get done. So we started out with 100 product backlog items. We completed 10. We got 90 product backlog items left. So that may take us approximately 9 sprints, whatever the sprint may be in your environment, 1 week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, or 1 month. So you can use that to forecast. So that's one way I like to use velocity from that particular standpoint. Hope that helps.
That's great. Thank you. All right. So, this question here. So, what philosophies or frameworks have you found helpful to encourage collective ownership and loving support within a Scrum team? I like that loving support. We all need a little love sometimes. Scott, you want to take this one?
Absolutely. What philosophies or frameworks have you found helpful to encourage collective ownership? Oh, I got to go with the Agile Manifesto from a philosopher's standpoint.
There you
I mean,
go.
I'm thinking about the Agile Manifesto, the four values and the 12 principles. So I really embody that. To me, the manifesto is the philosophy in terms of, to me, Scrum is how are we going to do the work? And the Agile Manifesto is, okay, what are we thinking about as we do the work? We're thinking about people over processes. You get the idea. And my favorite principle in the manifesto is number 12, principle number 12. At regular intervals, we're going to take a look at our behavior and adapt accordingly. Andrana, anything that?
I think that's a great answer. I think not necessarily philosophy, but restrain from solving the problem for them every single time. So I think, or doing it yourself, I think sometimes even that's really challenging for me because I'm like, well, I'd just rather get it done or get it out of the way. So I think that's another one to add to that.
I have one more to give on the framework side. Can I give one more, Ms. Lindsay?
Yes, give one more.
Now, on the framework side, I have used Kanban to force the team to work together. They didn't know it because I ran a little trick. At retrospective, I saw that, hey, ideally, when I'm with my team, I'm looking at the team after sprint planning to see what did they do after sprint planning. Visualize we face to face. This is easy to see if we face to face. So we're done with sprint planning. What happens after sprint planning? Does everybody come together, swarm on the problem, or does everybody go their own separate way? So I observed everybody was going their separate way. I said, wait, I talked to the product owner. I said, hey, product owner, I want to use Kanban for the next sprint. Would you be open to that? She said, yeah. I don't really know what it is, but yeah. So I explained it at the sprint retrospective, and the team decided, hey, okay, we'll use Kanban. So we get to sprint planning. I said, hey, we created our sprint goal. They selected one product backlog item. I said, stop. What do you mean, stop? Work on that till you get it done, take it all the way and give it to the customer. Then what? Then when you're done, come back to the product backlog, get another item, work on it. But Scott, I'm front-end development. This is a back-end ticket. What can I do? I don't know. Go talk to the front-end person, see how you can support. See how I'm bringing them together to collaborate with each other. Well, Scott, I'm a tester. What should I do? Well, I don't know. Well, what if I can write the test first before they write the code? Ah, you're teaching yourself test-driven development. Beautiful. Oh, love it. Go talk to them and see how you can help. How y'all see it? So I like Kanban to use it from the standpoint of really just helping the team to work together and collaborate. And once we did that, we back to full scrum. Scott, I like Kanban. You don't need it. I just use it to force y'all to work together.
That's great.
Hope that
Yeah, I
helped.
mean, it really doesn't have to be one or the other. You can incorporate different elements of Scrum and Kanban together. It's whatever works well for your team. So that's great. So this question from James here just it made me laugh. So I'm going to read it. So what are some of your tips for a great stand-up? Number one, we call it a daily Scrum, not a stand-up. But my goal is to get them to a place where they are running their own stand-up so I could sit back with my feet up. Andriana, want to start with this one?
The funny thing is, Scott is much nicer in that regard than me because after a certain point, I'm just like, and you're on your own. So I give like a much like direct, like, okay, I'm going to do it for this time period, especially if it's a brand new team. I'm like, all right, so we'll discuss a few different things, especially in like a retrospective, like, what way do you guys want to run this? Instead of me just coming in and saying, let's do this, I try to start with, even if it's a brand new team, how do you guys want to run this? Do you want to do round robin? I mean, we have to have the sprint goal up and visible and be discussing, our progress toward the sprint goal. But ultimately, that's kind of where I've been that person, James, where I've been like a year running the daily scrum. I almost said stand up, but I've been that person. So it totally like I'm like every new team I start with, I'm like, all right, let's discuss how you want to run this, and I will be exiting in a month. And this is for you. And I start by teaching them the daily scrum, it's for you. It's for the developers. It's by the developers. The goal is to inspect your progress toward your sprint goal. You don't need me here. It's not a problem solving meeting. We're trying to understand what are the issues, and we can discuss some of those after. If you have impediments, we can discuss that you can't remove yourself. We can discuss after, but I usually start with that. And I'm very like, put my foot down. This is the way it's going to be. So then I can put my feet up. But I'm more direct again because I had to do this for so long. But Scott, I think you're a little bit nicer than me and have a different approach.
Scott, what do you have
I
to
love
add?
that. I love that. One of the things you highlighted, I do start out with the Scrum guide, making sure they understand, first of all, what is the purpose of this event? And now, John, you did identify that. We need to figure out, are we on track of meeting our sprint goal? And if not, we're thinking about empiricism. We're going to adapt what we're going to look at what we did yesterday. Okay. How did that go? It didn't go very well. Okay. I'm not building the thing. So you developers, the people who are building it, need to be having that conversation. I'm over here in the corner. I have nothing to do with what y'all trying to build. So once we get that, okay, we talked about what we did yesterday and how that went. Then the next question becomes, okay, what do we need to do now? And what work are we going to select the most important work, keeping in mind our sprint goal? Okay, what's the next best step that we can take that's going to get us a step closer to our ultimate goal, which is the sprint goal? So they're having that conversation, and we have 15 minutes to have that conversation. So what we do when the Scrum Master says, okay, hey, Elmo, you can use something like Elmo. Enough, let's move on. Want to make sure the conversation is about what we're trying to accomplish, and so we can get past that, move on. Hope that helps.
Awesome. Thank you. That was great. And thank you so much for that question, James. That was a really good one. So, this question here from Sasha. So, which first small changes towards Agile and Scrum can I suggest in a company with a high resistance to, now I'm trying to understand this question, high resistance to improvements that and lack of communication? Maybe due to 100% remote work. So, what are some small steps you can take with a resistant company? And feel free to clarify your question, Sasha, in the chat, and I can relay that back to Scott and Adriana. Adriana, do you want to start here?
Yeah, my immediate thought is to do something like a retrospective and start with, and you can call it whatever you want at this, because you're not technically doing Scrum, you're just looking for these small steps. I think that is in some ways what a lot of people start with because it's really helpful to think of like how let's get together, let's talk about what are some things that are in our control that we can change and we can take action items and we can actively work on throughout and try to have a next checkpoint. So it's not just this looming thing that goes over. So I do this with some of the leaders that I work with. We meet and try to get rid of some of the organizational impediments that teams have or some of the organizational things that are slowing us down. And I will say some people are, they like going to the retrospective and voicing their opinion, but they don't necessarily like to do the work to improve, which has been really challenging. I felt like, just pinging them all the time, right? I felt like just repeating myself, trying to push for change. I think one of the things that kind of resonated is, again, doing that coaching with leaders in your organization is you can't expect your team members to change if you're not willing to change as a leader. And that really resonated with a lot of people and having that conversation to where now they're taking a lot of ownership in their part in making it better. When you make it better at the organizational level, you're making it better for the team. So that's the initial thing that comes to mind. Scott, do you have anything else to add? And a lot of us, we work remote. So a lot of people, we have people in Argentina, we have people in India, we have people in Brazil. We have people in Spain and we have people in the US. So we have a team all over the place, even though some people are in an office but not working with their team. So we have that exact same problem with remote or dispersed work.
That's a very good point. And Sasha, first small changes toward Agile and Scrum in a company that is resistant to improvement. I'm a rogue type of Scrum Master. So I'm gonna do my own thing. I'm gonna tell the teams that, look, hey, we're gonna do this, we're gonna deliver. And I have found that when I deliver, that seems to take away an awful lot of problems. So I deliver first and then I make my ask. That's my first focus when I join the Scrum team, help them to deliver. Now, in the meantime, some of the things I'm doing in the retrospective is I like liberating structures. We all have been to meetings whereas, kind of like this one that you're coming to today, whereas the content is already, well, actually you're creating content. So actually this would be a good case. Liberating structures is the tool that I use for retrospectives and a lot of collaboration. You've never heard of it. Liberating structures, just like it sounds. They have, oh, beautiful, beautiful. Thank you, James. I use that and it's like Baskin and Robbins like ice cream. You got 33 flavors. Yeah. Now, one of the tools in there is called 15% solutions. We all have teams, Sasha and everybody else, that, even my great teams, they think they're so great, but that's still something to improve upon. So I like to use 15. Well, we didn't get it done this time because the QA didn't get this done. Or we had a dependency on another team, another department, whatever it may be. There's always something. So 15% solutions is about, okay, take away all those blockers and things that you're complaining about and ask the question to our team and to ourselves, what can we do about this problem? The organization is over there, but we here at the local on the battlefield, what can we do as a Scrum team to get it done, to solve this problem, to whatever that issue may be, Sasha? And I love that, liberating structures and to for the team to come up with some different ideas in terms of how we're going to improve and make things better around here. Hope that helps.
That was
15%
great.
solutions.
Thank you. And I'll drop into the chat in a second. We actually have a learning series on the scrum.org website for facilitation techniques for Scrum events. I'm going to drop that into the chat for you all to use as a resource as well. Another one that a bunch of professional Scrum trainers contribute to is tastycupcakes.org. You can check that out too. You can get some great ideas there also. So lots of great resources out there to help with these things. So this next question here is kind of fun. So Scott, what are the practical anti-patterns in the life of a Scrum Master?
What are the practical,
So what
Michelle?
are some, so we can kind of rephrase that a little bit, maybe some common anti-patterns that Scrum Masters can fall into.
Okay. First of all, let me start off by identifying what is an anti-pattern for those of you who may not know. An anti-pattern is something done with good intention, but has a bad outcome. Now, my favorite of not to do is this. At some point in time, you're going to have your Scrum team come to you, specifically developers, come to you and say, "Hey, Scott, we got sprint review later on today. The development is done, but testing is not done. Scott, can we write another ticket and put the testing in the product backlog and put the, you know, and say the development work is done?" Absolutely, no, we cannot because it's not done. No. So that would be an anti-pattern. I see that in some environments where the Scrum Master allowed the teams to split that. Now, I even remember Ken Schwaber said something about this here in an article once upon a time. We want the Scrum team, when they don't get it done, we want that to pain them. We want that to hurt. Almost like you playing sports, that when you lose, you should be happy about losing. It's either win or lose. You either got it done or you didn't. You know what I mean? So, it's not like in elementary school where they're going to give you a trophy for or participating. No, that's not what we're doing. So yeah, don't allow your team to do that. Set the standard. Have the courage to say, "No, I don't think that's a good idea," because you are the Scrum Master representing Scrum. Andriana.
Yeah, I think I will say I'll answer the question based on like what are some anti-patterns for a Scrum Master. I'll start with never changing up the sprint retrospective. We talk about tasty cupcakes and all these other things. It could feel like Groundhog's Day. So your team can get very bored and disengaged, and they feel like the event isn't effective. So that's one of the things that comes to mind. I think we already talked about the daily scrum, a scrum master owning that event and continuously like being the one leading it and not allowing the developers to actually lead that. And then sometimes even having no retrospective, I think that becomes problematic. Oh, we'll skip it this time. Everything went so well. Our team is so great and fantastic. There's nothing for us to improve on. So there's always something for you to improve on. There's always a new challenge. You're working in a complex environment. There is always something new, challenging, and crazy that happens. I worked with a team that they were really exceptional. They always got it done. They loved every event. They owned it. I didn't even a lot, you know, a lot of times as a scrum master, you end up, you know, facilitating the retrospective, but they would do it. They'd be like, I have this idea for the retrospective. They were very active, very engaged. And one sprint, they didn't get anything done, like nothing. And working with a new technology, they had a lot of challenges. We had to discuss ways that we can, you know, remove some of these barriers and issues and improve the learning curve. So, and I think the other thing is no documentation. I think sometimes people get caught up in like, oh, well, working software over doc it's over documentation, not no documentation. Like, oh, yeah, we can complete this work with no documentation. We've met the definition of done, and then no one knows how to integrate with your work. So, those are some things that, and I probably the last thing for a scrum master is not being a safe space for people, not being, you know, holding things as confidential, being able to not being able to work with other team members to kind of help resolve some conflicts that are at a point of, you know, they're not able to resolve them on their own. So those are some things that come to mind when I think of anti-patterns for Scrum Masters.
Awesome. Thank you. Those are some great tips to share there on that, things to avoid. So, this question here, so how do you deal with a team member who starts to dominate the team? And the other team members are fine though, because they do not like to take any responsibilities. So how do you help the team find that balance? Which one of you wants to start with this one? Because I'm sure you both have some good insights here.
I take it first. First of all, I'm thinking about the Scrum Guide. As we read the Scrum Guide, the fourth bullet point under developers is we want the developers to hold themselves accountable. So how do I deal with the team member who starts to dominate the team? At first, I'm going to be quiet. I'm not going to do anything. Now, let's say sprint retrospective is today is Wednesday. Let's say sprint retrospective is Friday. Now, what I would do with the sprint retrospective, Stella, is say, hey, how's everything going, everybody? Oh, great, fantastic. Well, hey, I've been seeing this, I've been seeing that. Do y'all see any concerns? Do we have any problems there that we need to talk about? See, I'm trying to create that open space for them to talk about the elephant in the room, so to speak, those behaviors that are going on. So I'm just going to facilitate and allow them to really step up to the plate and handle those problems, because we really want to foster an environment where they handle their own problems. Now, there may be a time where we need to step in, like I'm doing now. I'm facilitating. And if they don't say anything, I will bring that up specifically. Hey, I heard this. Tell me about this. Do y'all think that's conducive for where we're trying to go as a great team? Do we need to revisit our team working agreement, whatever that may be? Certainly an opportunity for me to talk about it sprint retrospective if it hasn't been talked about already. Andriana.
Yes, I agree with that. I think you already mentioned liberating structures. I think the technique, 1-2-4-all, is a good one to get people right. The one, people writing on their own, then people are in pairs, and then people are four, and then people come all together and actually give their opinion. So at least then you're getting some diverse opinions, and you're allowing that space for people to communicate and work together. I think the other thing is talking directly to that person is okay too, and understanding their motive and, you know, seeing like, you know, some people, they just think they're right all the time, and some people are just, they don't like the awkward silence. So they're rambling on, and just allowing them to like sit in that space and allow other people and lead and encourage. So sometimes I see this a lot often with like lead engineers, where they're the first to speak, they never stop speaking, and they don't give their team the space. And just you know, coaching them in what leadership really is, and helping them foster an environment where they're getting diverse opinions, so that we can come up with the best solution, not just a solution that they suggested.
That is awesome advice there. Thank you so much. I hope that helps. So this question that just came in from Aditi here. The role of the Scrum Master talks about removing impediments. How do we coach the team to remove the impediments and fight this urge to remove it for them? What should be the standard thought process and workflow in these scenarios? Who wants to take this one?
Yeah, I'll start with an impediment is something that the team cannot remove themselves. So that's slowing them down or stopping them from work. So when I'm thinking about the thought process of this, yeah, is it something they can, my first thought is this something they can do on their own? Is this as something as you have an issue with your MacBook and you can fill out a help desk ticket and you don't need me to do that? Like, I'm not going to be your Scrum assistant or your work assistant. Like, you can do something like that alone. Now, when we're talking about an organizational impediment that we just talked about, maybe I'll just kind of keep that same thing of talking about computers. We had an issue where our organization has a standard for what type of computers you get, but everybody's computer was crashing when they were using this particular software that they had to use. This is not something that they could go fill out a help desk ticket because it's literally like 50 engineers. And they need special approval. So something like that, you can go, I went to management and I said, hey, here's our issue. This isn't working for anyone, one of the software development managers. We have to make this change immediately. So that comes to top of my mind is like, this is something that they can't handle themselves versus something as simple as you need help desk help. Or even when you're working on, it could also be as simple as talking to another team. It is the developer's responsibility to work with other team members or people on the opposite team to get to done. So trying not to be that communication, like go between, trying not to be their assistant. So those are at least some of the things that come to mind. Scott, do you have some others?
The other part of that is, how do you keep yourself from jumping in and just solving the problems for them? Well, that's where I go back to thinking about servant leadership. Servant leadership means people will grow as a result of your leadership. So I've come to ask myself two questions before I talk to or deal with anybody on this planet. Scott, is what you're about to do or say going to empower somebody to do their job, or are you enabling them? We're doing one or the other. Which one are you doing? So if I can continue to jump in and solve their problems, I'm enabling the behavior. No, I want to empower them to solve their own problems. Again, as Andreana said, if it's something that they can solve themselves, outside of that, I will jump in and do what I need to do as a Scrum Master to help it get resolved. So those are two questions I ask myself before I act, and that seems to help me stay grounded and do the right thing. Is what you're about to do going to empower the team, or are you enabling the team?
Thank you both. That is great. This next question here. So, actually lost my spot. So many great questions. So, I'm gonna kind of rephrase this question a little bit. So, how do you determine like the types of projects or products that you were working on that would advocate for using Scrum over Kanban over another framework? Like, what are some examples where you've seen where one would work better than the other, or where it's best to incorporate both? Like, are there some stories that you can share on that?
Yeah, I have one. I heard Kanban, I heard Scrum. Now, I've been in some environments where they're not building anything brand new. I'm thinking about a major bank that we was at. I was on a team, and basically all we was doing was maintenance work. They was trying to use Scrum in that environment, in an environment where we're not delivering anything of value to the customer. However, we're dealing with service tickets and things of that. Scrum to me wasn't the best process or approach to that work because you got so many tickets, call tickets coming in from customers with problems. And let's try Kanban. So we talked about it. I gave it some different options and we came up with Kanban as an option. We tried that and Kanban seemed to work best for that particular situation. Now, when I'm on a team that we are delivering something brand new to the customer, here's the caveat. But let me go back to the centrifine graph, the Rath-Stacey diagram. We have simple work where everything is known. We have complicated work where there's more known than unknown. We have complex work where there's more unknown than known about what we're trying to do. And then we have chaotic work. Very little is known. So in most cases, if we're in a complex domain, Scrum was made for that. that's going to be the tool of choice. So I'm looking at those type of things, and to you know, before I introduce this to a company and organization, looking at their work. Is it simple? Is it complicated? Is it complex? Is it chaotic? Are we trying to deliver something brand new to the customer each and every sprint? If the answer is yes, then I'm going to go with Scrum. If the answer is no, if it's more on the maintenance side, I'm going to look at Kanban or some other tool based upon the environment. Hope that helps. I'm trying to.
Yeah. So when I think of Scrum versus Kanban or some other type of framework, for Scrum, I'm thinking, do we need regular feedback? Do we need iterations? Do we need to plan? For example, I worked with a client that we built a restaurant app. We needed their feedback on a regular basis because they were changing a lot of things. They had a lot of questions. They wanted to see it. It was just a lot of feedback that was needed. And so that we absolutely needed to use Scrum in that situation. So when I think of Kanban, continuous flow, in a Kanban work cycle, as soon as one thing finishes, the team takes up another. So with one team that I use Kanban with, this team, we worked at a company that did shoe releases. You could guess what company that is, but we would do shoe releases basically every few weeks, major ones. And what my team did was fight bots. And sometimes you win that battle. Sometimes, a lot of times, you lose that battle with fighting the bots. But Kanban worked best for them because they needed to be reactive. They needed to continuously work on something, get information usually from a release. We would understand how many bots, you know, bought shoes versus didn't, and then quickly change. So we didn't really need that like iteration where this month we're doing X, Y, and Z. We really needed to be able to continuously work on something as it came up and quickly adapt and reorder. There's no specific mechanism for that inspect and adapt. So we did have to create our own. So those are some things to think about when you're thinking about Kanban versus Scrum or another framework.
Great, thank you. Okay, so we're gonna switch gears again. These questions are great. They're all over the place. So any tips on splitting stories across more than one Scrum team? Who wants to take this one?
My first thought is work with that other Scrum team. Usually in this situation, we would bring the teams together and have a discussion on who's going to do what and how it should be split and what actual, because the team's going to know best. I'm not going to know best on how it should be split, but get those team or, you know, one or two people on those teams and discuss like, how can this be broken down? Have them in your, if you, hopefully you do product backlog refinement, have that discussion, make sure they're actionable, make sure that it's something that literally can be done and align if you need to align on sprint, on what sprint this is going to be done with that other team. That's immediately what comes to mind is just work with the teams. They know best on how it should be split. Definitely look at it, challenge them, make sure that's not sized to where it's a point of like an XXL. Breaking that work down into something actionable is going to be really important. Scott?
Yeah, and the other thing I would add, I mean, you touched on it, take it to the team, you know, work with that team. The other thing I've done, if you've in this environment, maybe you have, most Scrum Masters have two teams on average. But watch this. What if both of your teams are dealing with the same product? One is web-based, one is mobile-based. So there's some overlap of work there. So I posed the idea, I wouldn't like, they already thought about it themselves. Hey, should we combine both of these teams? But Scott, the Scrum guy says we can't go over 10 people. No, Scrum guy says typically 10 or fewer people is on a Scrum team. Oh, we can go more than the Scrum, 10 on a team? Yeah, there's other things we have to think about, like we adding more complexity to the situation, but it's about what you want to do. Do y'all think it's beneficial for y'all to do this? And in their case, say, hey, let's try it. And we always have to what? Sprint retrospective to inspect and adapt to see how it's working. So yeah, in most cases, if I'm working on a team that has mobile and web applications, two different teams, bring them together. That's the one way that, you know, could not necessarily solve the splitting stories portion, because they're working on different things within that as well. So you're going to have to do some more tweaking in that as well, not just a story standpoint. So hopefully that helps.
Awesome, thank you. All right, so there's a two-part question here that I think be helpful to the entire audience and our listeners. So what book has been most impactful in your development for both of you? And what qualification has been best for your development? Adriana, should
yeah,
we start
the
with
first
you?
One's, yeah, the first one's pretty easy for me. The second one, I got to think about what qualifications has been the best for your development. That one's a little tougher. So I think,
or maybe there's something that's not a qualification that you want to highlight that may help our audience.
Yeah, so for the first one, I think Mastering Professional Scrum. I think that book has significantly helped me improve my team. So they have action items at the end of every single chapter. And I thought that was really helpful. These are questions that I even brought up to the team in some retrospective. So I really like that book. And then for one of the qualifications, I'm going to say one of the skills that I think has helped me with not only my development, but growing in my career has been the skill of negotiating. So when you're working with different teams, when you're working at a large organization, the ability to negotiate work, to negotiate priority, to negotiate help, and even getting a little bit of a discount on things to help your team has been really valuable. And I think that's like a secret sauce that I don't think many people talk about when they talk about being an effective and a good scrum master, is the ability to negotiate. And that wasn't something I had early in my career. And a friend was like, this is a skill that you need to have. And she was initially talking about it in the frame of like, when you find a job, negotiating your salary. But the information that I was learning was so good just in general. I was like, whoa, I can use this just on my job on a daily basis in influencing people. So those are my answers for that, Scott.
That's great.
Favorite book is definitely Scrum Mastery by Geoff Watts. I think I'm pronouncing that right. Geoff Watts, Scrum Mastery, From Good to Great Servant Leadership. The other part of that is qualifications. I grew up on the Scrum Guide, 2017 Scrum Guide, which called out, you know, as a Scrum Master, we are kind of like a servant leader. Today's Scrum Guide says that we are a true leader. So I come up studying servant leadership, and I love servant leadership. It means that other people will grow, your teams will grow, your product will grow, everything around you will grow as a result of your leadership. So I've deep dive into that. And what I need mostly for that in terms of qualifications is good communication skills. You need that in whatever you're doing, whether you're a developer, project manager, business analyst. Communication skills is one of the number one, number two skills in anything that you're going to be doing in life. Now, Scrum.org has an amazing professional facilitation skills class now. But when I came into the game years ago, they didn't have that. So what did I do? I went to Toastmasters. Why? So that I can work on my communication skills. Because I knew, and now you know, that the fastest way to mastery is to get feedback. The other fastest way to mastery is to teach something to somebody who don't know something, or to share information that you know to somebody else that don't know it. You actually putting yourself in a teaching stance, but when you do that, so Scrum Mastery, and I would say Toastmasters would be an organization, $40 every 6 months. You get, you know, you with like-minded people, you go in and present. Everything in Toastmasters is working on a specific aspect of your communication skills. Most people think Toastmasters is just a place where you go be a public speaker. That's the number one or number two thing that people in the world fear the most. The other thing is a snake. Yeah, I fear both of them, snakes and public speaking. So Toastmasters, I would say, yeah, it would be a great option for you as well. Now, the professional skills facilitation class, you know, Andrea and I, we do offer that. They got that wonderful class here at Scrum.org. If they had that when I came in years ago, I definitely would have took that class, because as a Scrum Master, you are wearing your teaching hat, your facilitating hat, your coaching hat, your mentor hat. What's the common denominator in all four of those hats? Communication. Yes.
Yep. Communication is key for a lot of these things. So I want to thank you both so much. I think we're coming up to our time for questions, but I do want to allow you both to share any final words, final advice for audience today and let our audience know how they can best connect with you. So let's start with you, Andriana. Do you have anything you want to leave the audience with?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you all for joining. I think one of the things that I wish I would have done earlier in my career was learn the skill of negotiation and just learn one thing at a time. Just continuously improve one thing at a time. Don't get too overwhelmed. You'll have some gaps in your career, but that's totally fine. Everyone has gaps in their career, and just tackling it one thing at a time can taking that same approach that we tell our teams to continuously improve and evaluate ourselves. I would recommend you do that same thing. And you can always find us on YouTube, Not Scrum Done Podcast. You can find my website at projectacademy.co, and then you can find me on LinkedIn at Andriana Marshall.
My final words for everybody is, first of all, thank you, Lindsay. Thank you, Scrum.org, for hosting this. Will be to read your Scrum guide every day. Really, you know, every podcast, you know, every interaction I'm having with a person is, did you read your Scrum guide today? No. Well, if we masters of Scrum, if you're a Scrum master, then if you're not reading it every day, don't leave it to your memory that you know this stuff. Even before I did this call today, I read the Scrum guide before I got on this call, because I want to use that as our single source of foundational truth for us to have this conversation. And if you're not doing that, how can you teach and really recreate this in the workplace if you're not reading it? Your memory, I promise you, is not that good. And then the other thing is, if you want to connect with me, I'm active on LinkedIn, LinkedIn /GSM Scott. George, Sam, Mary, Scott. Simple.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. So thank you both so much for sharing your knowledge today and giving us your time. I think that this was a great session, and I hope our listeners got a lot out of this. I sure did. And yeah, so thank you, everybody. And we run these sessions about once a month. So please be sure to check back, and you will get the recording in your inbox within 24 hours in the event that you want to go back and re-listen to some of the advice that was shared today. So, thank you both so much, and thank you, listeners and audience, and Scrum on. Take care.